Hey, good morning. My name is Steve, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Steve.
In recovery. So we're going to start. We're a little bit late. We were chatting here and lost track of the time. But we have until 9:45. So I don't know if there's a, looks like there may be no leader here, but why don't we kind of, I don't have a format, but why don't we start off with the serenity prayer? God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, so maybe we just go for 30 minutes each and then we'll kind of wing it. Okay, let me put this on 30 and I can just keep an eye on it. As I said, I'm Steve. I'm a compulsive eater in recovery.
Hey, Steve.
And so 30 minutes, that'll give me time to give a little bit of background and then where I'm at now with gratitude, and which to me is like this with my relationship with my higher power and my 11-step work and spirituality. So let's see. So I'll qualify. I'm a food sponsor. I finished my inventory, but I haven't stepped up yet. I'm really looking forward to doing that this week as an inventory sponsor. I've lost 75 pounds. I celebrated a year in Seahaw a couple of weeks ago. And I love sponsoring. I love being of service. It's great to be here at the convention and meet people from all over the country, I guess, even the world, really. So it's exciting. And last year was my first convention, and I was a newcomer. My first exposure to Seahaw was in the early 90s when it was OAHOW. In fact, I recently cleaned out some stuff in my apartment and came across a whole booklet, OA How, you know, I threw it away. No need to hang on to the old stuff. But it was a fond memory. And I realized at the time that I knew that I needed this. I dabbled with other food programs and couldn't get it. And but I also could not conceive of this as a way of life for me. And so I did it. I got a sponsor who I've actually seen here at the convention. He's still here. But I wasn't ready. What was I? Early 30s, and just couldn't get it. Needed to be more desperate. Needed to be more powerless, more teachable. And that happened. That gift was given to me in the intervening, I don't know how many years, over 15 years probably. Let's see. So food. My earliest memory of food, to qualify, was when I was maybe about 5 years old. I remember growing up with a friend, my friend Lance, and our parents were friends since before we were born. We would have our birthday parties together because I'm November 29th and he was November 21st. And this is an example of me taking in data from the world, which is emotionally neutral, and then putting a spin on it that puts me way down here. We would have our birthday parties together, and as kids, we would get gifts, mostly toys, because we were five-year-olds, you know, four-year-olds. And I would watch him opening his gifts, and I would watch the way that he reacted. You know, when you're a kid and you get clothing, it's a bummer. It's a dud gift. But when you get a toy, more plastic, the more shiny, the better. Batteries, even better. But he would get clothing. I would get clothing, and I would feel like, oh, and I'd have to act happy. Even as a five-year-old, he would get clothing, and he would try it on, and he would be excited, and he would kind of model it in a way. And I took that neutral data and spun it that I was less sophisticated. I didn't use these words, of course, but I was less sophisticated. Somehow I was less than Lance. And I got a lot of other bits of data that I used it to build this brick wall. And it felt horrible, and I didn't see any way out of it. It was a hole that I built for myself as a five-year-old. And the thought occurred to me, I can at least be bigger than him. And I was always taller. I'm 6'3". I've always been a big kid. But I went into the pantry, and I got some food, and I ate it. Literally, like, that's me taking care of business. That's taking care of me managing my emotional landscape, because that's the only tool that I had. And so that started off on... That was my character at the time. It's like, do what I need to do to feel good now. And usually feeling bad can be remedied by looking to the external world or taking in external things, food or whatever, to feel good. I didn't know about, you know, how can you as a five-year-old, but I didn't do it as a 13-year-old, as a 16-year-old. I didn't do it as a 20-year-old. I finally got exposed to 12-step programs when I was 21, a different 12-step program. Which saved my life, and I wouldn't have made it to my 30s without that other program. So it's, my whole life has been about managing my emotions, and I was able to do it to a limited degree, And then there was always consequences and cost associated with managing my emotions that way. So now I'm exposed to 12 steps in my early 20s, and it occurs to me, and I hear about God, I hear about the steps, I hear about the 11th step, the first three steps, and I'm agnostic at the time. And so for me, this will be a spiritual, because like I said in the beginning, gratitude and really is about, for me, it's about a spiritual approach. I'm agnostic, and I'm hearing a lot about spirituality, and I've always been on a search. I've always enjoyed talking about, does God exist? I loved cosmology, I loved physics and the Big Bang Theory. I mean, I wanted to find out about this world and my part in it, because I always felt awkward. When I was in junior high school, I considered suicide. I just considered it. I don't think I ever would have done it, but it was that painful to go through puberty, and it was just a horrible time. I mean, I just did not have tools at all. And so what I saw was the people in the rooms that had some kind of spiritual program seemed to be happier. I got that by observing everybody. And I've always been interested in getting results. I want results. And I was willing to consider the fact, without being this conscious of it at the time, that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe entertain the idea that God exists or a higher power exists. And at the time, my grandfather had recently passed. I really loved him. I knew that he loved me. And that was a model, an emotional model, for me to be able to think of some spiritual entity who had passed, and my imagination said, well, he's in this other realm, and so he has all the answers. He knows if there's life after death. He just knows. If he's there, he knows. I'll just call on him, and I'll have conversations with him. And that was my entree into making a crack in my thirst and need for provable proof that God existed. I had to suspend that. And I was willing to suspend it because I wanted to be comfortable in my own skin. I wanted to have a shot at being happy, joyous, and free. And so I considered that, and I ran with that for a while. And then over the decades, it's evolved. Until I was in other 12-step programs, and this, I'm going to speak to people that might be slipping, that might be having a hard time retaining abstinence. I was having a hard time in another program, and I remember reading in the Big Book a phrase that said something about, there will come a time when there will stand nothing will stand between you and the next drink but your relationship with God. And it really jumped out to me as, this is the ultimate, I don't know, I thought of it as a safety net. And I realized that, yes, I had come a long way since the days when I was first exposed to 12 steps with my concept of a higher power, but that wasn't enough anymore. I felt like I needed to have a working, breathing, living relationship with a God who knew who Steve R. was personally, who really intimately knew me, who loved me, who wanted the best for me, who wanted to guide me. And I had a hard time grasping that, but I felt like that's what I needed. I needed a relationship with a higher power that came with me in between meetings, in between phone calls, when I was in bed at night alone, when I was about to go for the first bite, or in my struggles in life. And so I set out with that intention to find that kind of a relationship. And so that's what I did. Without getting into my search specifically, which I can talk to you about afterwards, I read, I talked to a lot of people, I went out to dinner with people that had a really vibrant spiritual life. I asked them questions. I was on a search. And I found my way. I found my way that for me today works. And the way that this ties into this meeting's theme is that I do believe that working the 12 steps, I heard this once before, but it really resonated to me. Working the 12 steps is all about having a spiritual experience. That's the ultimate goal. For me, that's what I like to think of it as. Yes, it's about admitting that I'm powerless. Yes, it's about doing the fourth and fifth step to find out what items are not saleable as a going human concern. And then being able to identify those things that are spoiled or not saleable and ask for assistance in healing those things, including making amends to people. That's part of the cleaning process and healing process. All that is about, for me, have this channel to God. I kind of envision it like it's a tunnel, but there's all these boulders and debris blocking me between, you know, that relationship. And this is about taking a shovel and a pickaxe and starting the work of digging it out. And it doesn't happen like this. And it's based on consistent, daily, little chips at that process. It's got to be sustainable. It can't be about, I'm going for a flash of a spiritual experience now. It's got to be a way of life. And it was born of desperation. If I hadn't had the emotional pain, then I don't think I would have had the, you know. So it is a gift of desperation. An attitude of gratitude for me has always worked. The minute I heard that, and the minute I've played around with making a gratitude list, the first time that I did it, I experienced a shift in my attitude. And it just shifts my perspective. It shifts what I focus on. And one of the things that I like to talk about with sponsees is there's this famous picture in psychology books, Psychology 101. It's a drawing. I don't know when it was made, but it's either you look at the same drawing and you either see an old, ugly woman or a beautiful young woman, just the same picture. And you can kind of do something with your eyes and you can focus on different lines. Oh, that's not a pearl on her necklace. That's the eye. Oh, my God. And then the beautiful woman jumps out of this picture. Or you can say, no, that's a necklace. And then you see the old, ugly woman. So that's what a gratitude list does for me. That's what my relationship with my higher power does for me. And I want to get specifically into how that works for me. But it's all about my perspective and what I choose to focus on. And I used to think that that's BS. That's the booby prize. I mean, I really want to change. I don't want to just have to look at this cup and see, well, it's either something I can piss in or something I can drink coffee out of, or I can dig sand with it, or, you know, I either want like a golden shovel or I want a beautiful coffee. It's like I didn't want to do the work. I didn't want to. And so where I'm at now is I'm really looking at that example of this picture. And I'm seeing, this is my belief, that I've got physical eyes and I've got spiritual eyes. And I can choose which set of eyes that I want to look through. And I could see a completely different world out there depending on what set of eyes I look at. The world doesn't have to change. I need to change to be able. And if the world changes, beautiful. And the world does change. But to focus on changing this, to me, which is what I did for many, many years, is not going to do it for me. I know that I've got a lot of power of choice, and I've heard it spoken at this convention a couple of times, that we have the power of choice throughout the day, every moment of the day. And that's something that's really helped me quite a bit. So I'm trying to think of a couple of concrete examples. You know, a lot of my recovery in CHOW right now has been about a shift in the way that I view myself, self-esteem, self-concept. So that's me. That's the picture of me is the two different types of women, let's say. How I view myself, I can be lower than the bottom of your shoe, or I can be so far superior to all of you in the room. What the hell am I doing here with these people? But that doesn't serve me. What that is that's coming from my ego. That's all fear. So what I can do is I can realize. The shift for me is realizing when I'm informing myself about a situation or about who I am or my value in a business situation, my value in a personal relationship, if I'm going to my ego to inform me of who I am, I'm screwed. If I go to my higher power, that's my spiritual eyes. And I look at it as I'm a radio set that only has two stations to dial into. I'm either going to dial into my ego or I'm going to dial into God. There's no in between. And I really have to make that decision. And it's not the kind of thing where I say, well, over here is God and over here is my ego. Well, I'll just turn it to God and I'm done. No, it doesn't work that way, because I'll turn it over here and then my ego will start to yap and I'll start to move the dial back over to here. And that's where it comes into being a constant choice throughout the day to decide what station I'm going to listen to. One of the ways that I know that I'm not dialed into the right radio station is if my messages are dark or small. Messages about myself, internal dialogue, that kind of stuff. If it's dark, if it's small, if it's fear-based, it's not of God. If it's expansive, if it's light, if it doesn't involve having to defend myself, if it doesn't involve having to prove myself, then it's of God. And I remember I would look at people who talked about how they had a spiritual practice every morning of prayer and meditation. They woke up, they read their spiritual literature, maybe they hit their knees, then they meditated for 10, 15, 20 minutes. For years, I thought, that would be really good if I could do that, and I just couldn't do it. And so what I'd like to just offer is if you have that desire but you're not doing it, don't give up on that desire. Don't be afraid to focus on, I'd like to be able to do this, because if it's really a sincere desire, somehow, some way, you'll work that into your recovery, into your daily life. By my not giving up on this myself, I've been able to be aware of what radio station I'm dialed into almost continuously throughout the day. And from 2010, when I started to realize I really need to have a healthy, vibrant, living relationship with God, and I didn't at that time, what is it, 2014? So over 4 years, and it's been it's been a journey where I didn't have any other choice but to go forward because I knew that I needed that kind of relationship to be comfortable in my skin. I didn't know the gifts that I would be given. I just had an intuition that that's the right direction to go in. And so I started in 2010, and I've really focused on it, as I said, by talking to people. And I'm just so, so grateful to know that what that's done for me in my HAL recovery is it's allowed me to move from a place where I had such bad self-esteem and issues with shame that affected intimacy that I just didn't even want to deal with being in a relationship with anybody. Some of that had to do with body image, that I was just completely anorexic in relationships for about 15 years. And just about a year ago, maybe a little bit less than a year ago, got involved in a relationship, which has since ended, but it was beautiful. And it was such a growing experience for me. And it opened me up to, I had the courage to face the shame that I had about myself, my sexuality, my body, all those kinds of things. Because I knew, and this is once again my choice, that I am a child of God, as all of you. This is my, you know, if you don't believe in God, then take it or leave it. But I believe that we're all connected. We're all deeply connected. And that seeing all of us separately sitting in these chairs is, for me, in a very real way, an illusion. This is an illusion of separateness, I take it. It's an illusion of separateness. Our skin color, our ethnicity, our socioeconomic background, that's all stuff that my ego does to categorize where do you fit into this box. That's all separation. And that's how to keep me different. That's how to keep me below the bottom of your shoe or much better than. What I'm focusing on now more is how we're all connected. I'm looking at our similarities, how we're all spiritual beings. We're all just trying to live our lives. We just want to be comfortable. We want to be abstinent. We want connection. You know, I believe that we all want connection. And we're just trying to find out how can we do this and be safe. You know, it's scary to be vulnerable and to be connected to people and to feel that kind of connectedness. So My relationship with God today has allowed me to be living in a state of gratitude on so many levels. And so I'm so grateful that I can see us as being connected, and I can see more of the I just focus on the similarities. I am you and you are me. And you know, it's been about, so one of the other things that I'll touch on, how much time? 13 minutes, is that when it comes to dealing with character defects, and for me, this comes into an attitude of gratitude. How can I be in an attitude of gratitude if my life is run by fear? My life was run by fear. It was saturated with fear. Avoidance, you know, protection, isolation for many, many years. And by me being able to see that I've got, there's two parts of me, as I mentioned. There's my ego and there's my soul. And the soul is God. I mean, it's a part of God. I'm a part of God the same way a wave on the ocean is made of the same water that the rest of the ocean is made of. It's no less, no more. It's the same. And so I was created. I mean, I'm perfect the way that I am. My soul is perfect. It doesn't need to be defended. It doesn't need to be explained. The essence of who I am doesn't need anything. It's complete. It's just about expressing and being creative and being out in the world and enjoying connection. That's what my soul is about. If I listen to my ego, then I have to be aware of what do I do for a living? How much money am I making? Am I attractive? Am I not? Am I liked? Am I not? I try not to listen to that radio station. So, but when it comes to character defects, one of my biggest character defects was fear. And I think I'm kind of drawing a blank, but I'm thinking to myself that My 11-step work has colored the way that I deal with character defects in a huge way. I don't look at my character defects as, there's so many ways to look at character defects, of pride, of gluttony, of all those different characters, any way you want to look at it. One of mine was I was broken beyond repair. So I look at all of my character defects, all of that dialogue in my head, as simply I'm listening to that ego radio station. So I don't have to get complicated with steps 6 and 7 to parse out what character defects coming into play here. The thing that's the challenge for me is if I'm in fear and I want to work on that character defect, well, what do I do? I can't just say to myself, don't think of it. Oh, I said a word, a food. But I can't just say, that's the example. Don't just think of, I have to be given an example of what to think of, not to think what I don't want to think of or how my spiritual program informs me of a way to frame me in relationship to the world and all of you. And so that's been huge. I feel like I'm being really vague here, and I'm really wanting to be some more specific. But I'm just so excited about where I'm at in my recovery right now. So my recovery, although it's only been a year, has started forming many, many years ago. And I started by talking to people that are having a hard time with slipping. So let me return to that at least. I know that a lot of people, I hear a lot of people talk in meetings about a slip is something that can inform us of where we're at. It can inform us of something that needs recovery. And so one of the things that I can look at, and luckily when I came in about a year ago, I floundered for a couple of months, but then it finally clicked in and I got it. I don't know if I'm going to remain abstinent for how long I'm going to remain abstinent. All I know is that I don't want to leave this program whether I slip or not. I want to have the courage to be able to take that information about a slip and ask myself, well, what is God trying to teach me here? Let me get centered for a minute because I feel like I'm being scattered here right now. You know, I'll change channels here. One of the things I wanted to talk about when I thought about gratitude was about my mom. My mom is 79. She's got very advanced Parkinson's. And so in the years that she's had it, I've been able to see her physical health dwindle, her ability to talk, her ability to walk, even her ability to think and communicate. And so as I'm in recovery, and I realize, you know, I'm 54, I'll be 54 this year, no matter what my mind tells me about my physical body, there's such gratitude about my health. You know, the fact that I've got two legs, I can walk, I can think. I'll be transparent, I'm really drawing a blank right now. Yeah, a senior moment at 54. Boy, I don't know. I'm just really excited about my abstinence. I mean, yeah, the gratitude list. Okay, here's the other thing. I was kind of touching on some ideas that I wanted. Gratitude, so I talked about the 12 steps as being the means by which I can be given a spiritual experience, and that's what recovery for me is about. So a gratitude list is a way for me to change my attitude. The 12 steps is a way to be able to change my attitude and my perspective. The thing that goes along with gratitude for me, I like a little bit of a cocktail here. Gratitude and humility are two things that I think are absolutely beautiful, beautiful states of mind. When I'm in a state of gratitude, but specifically humility, and if anyone wants a beautiful description of humility, read step 7 in the 12 and 12. 12 and 12 has a great, huge section about humility. When I'm in a state of humility, it's not about shame. It's about that I've given up fighting. You know, and the Big Book talks about this. I've given up fighting everybody and everything. I'm in a state of deep acceptance. When I'm making that gratitude list, I'm in a state of deep acceptance too, because it's easy to be in acceptance about the things that I'm grateful for. It's not so easy to be in things that I'm not so grateful for. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in everybody's life that's not pleasant. There's challenges, there's fears, there's unknowns. My headlights don't go out so far. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen later on today. And there might be things that are really scary and that might, you know. And so for me, it's about, humility is about deep acceptance, radical acceptance. So the theme of the workshop, and I'm going to kind of wrap it up with this, is about an attitude of gratitude, but it's about shifting my attitude. So here, this is one thing that's really served me so, so well. Sometimes my inner dialogue with the spiritual work that I've done is really much more quiet, but there's some days when it's just loud. And I look at it as my attic brain. My attic brain just starts yapping. I'm a piece of I'm never going to be successful. I'm never going to have enough money. I'm never going to have a meaningful relationship. I'm a horrible father. It just doesn't end. So what do I know to do in recovery? I can write about it. I can call my sponsor. I can do a 10th step on it. I can reach out to a newcomer and get out of myself. I can specifically target people who I remember shared at meetings recently that are going through a lot of pain for some reason. How are they specifically doing? I know someone that's struggling. Call them. Great. And I can do all of those things, and at the end of all that action, still it doesn't stop. So then this is for me the leap that's made the huge difference. If I've done all the actions that I can take, gratitude list, I can be in a state of humility, and it's just still there, then I kind of relax into it. And I have that deep, radical acceptance. It's like this. Every morning, I have something that I call an action partner, and we plan our day together. She does her day completely separate from me, but we sort of are accountability partners, and we plan our day, business-wise, step-wise, everything. And we check in with each other, and then we go and we do our day. And what I do with that is I plan my day, but stuff happens. Traffic happens. I might miss an appointment. Something else might happen that I didn't take into account. And after I turn over what my day is going to be, I also then turn it over to God. I turn my schedule over to God. And I say to God, if you would have me do what I plan, cool. But if you're going to completely change it up on me, I want to know, and I'm totally open to doing that. And I sometimes have to think to myself, take these piecemeal things that I'm planning and saying, but if this isn't going to happen, it's okay, God. And if I'm not going to make this money today, that's okay, because you're going to show me what else you'd rather have me do. And it's like deep, radical turning over and surrender specifically about the things that I planned. If I'm having one of those days where my mind is really yapping a lot, and I'm talking about radical acceptance now, and I've done all that action, I've made those outreach phone calls, I've talked to my sponsor, but I'm still in pain or I'm still in fear, then what I can do is recognize I've done everything that I know to do, and I'm going to turn to you, God, and say, you know, I just need help here, and I don't know if it's going to come right now, but for right now, I'm going to let it go, and I'm going to be in fear. I'm going to embrace it, and I'm just going to have my dinner or whatever time of day it is, and I know tomorrow it'll be different. I just need some sleep. Chemicals change, you know, and tomorrow morning I'll wake up with a different attitude, and I kind of relax into it. And there's a scene, I'll end it with this. There's a scene in a movie, I don't know if I can say the movie or if it's an outside issue, but there's a scene in a movie where there's these two people struggling. It's a World War II movie. And the guy there's a guy in the bottom and the guy in the top, and he's got a knife, and he's pressing it into the guy in the bottom's heart. Earlier in the fight, this one guy's winning, and then the tables get turned, and now he's on the bottom, and he's got this big, huge guy, and he's pressing a knife into his heart. It's a fight to the death. And you see the guy in the bottom panicking. He knows he's lost the fight. And he's starting to talk very, very quickly. He's trying to reason with this guy who doesn't speak English even. You don't have to do this. No, we can talk. And he's like trying to bargain with the guy. But the guy's going, shh. And he just, because of the struggle, the knife goes in really slow. It's kind of gruesome. But the bottom line is, it was such an incredibly emotional scene of the person fighting and bargaining and then slowly kind of gives up, and you see the life go out of him. And I interpret that scene for me not as a loss or as death, but as incredibly deep surrender. And I think of that when I'm in that mode where I've done all the work that I can do and my head is just yapping, just let it go. Just allow yourself to die and sink into that and turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. And it's been miraculous. So I'm living in a state because of gratitude, because of humility, knowing that with my higher power I can go through anything, where I'm able to have these radical, play around with the concept of radical acceptance, radical surrender, humility, gratitude. It's all about a shift in that perspective and seeing that beautiful young woman instead of that, some people came in so they don't know what I'm talking about, but that beautiful young woman instead of that old, it's all a matter of my choice. What do I want to focus on? The power is with me. And I'll end it by saying this. In a lot of 12-step rooms, I hear a lot of people talking about they're powerless. I'm so powerless over this. I'm going through this thing, but I'm powerless over it. I understand the value of emphasizing our powerlessness. My emphasis right now, my recovery is not in my powerlessness, it's over my power, my power of choice. I'm not helpless. I can choose. And that's a wonderful thing. So thanks.
Thank you, Steve. My name's Frank, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Frank.
He said everything I was going to say, so now let's open it up to question and answer. No, really, some lovely things. I want to start off here, and I have this in my phone. I have 1 year, 3 months, 5 days, 2 hours, 55 minutes, and 56 seconds. Now I'll go back to the alarm clock and set myself up. Testing. Can you hear? Okay. Let me set a timer for myself.
I don't hear it working, actually. Is it?
Hello? Testing. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Usually I don't need one of these, but I'll speak up. Again, thank you, Steve. He said so much of what I believe and what I do for myself. And the attitude of gratitude, when I heard the subject of this group, I went, yep, that's where it's at. And I have not spent my life in gratitude. I've spent my life in fear, struggle, trying to appear like I was normal and the best. And it was a lot of work, and I didn't discover it till I was 38 years old and I went into therapy. And I can give total credit to a therapist for saving my life at that point. Because up to that point, and I'm going to give a little background and then, you know, jump to the present. I'm so grateful to be here this morning. I'm so grateful to see this room packed. 15, 20 years ago, I wouldn't be grateful getting out of bed because I didn't know how to get out of bed. As you said, a spiritual practice in the morning. First thing I did at 5 o'clock when my alarm went off, because I like to prep in the morning no matter what I'm doing, I did my meditation of, God, I want to be a mouthpiece for peace and love and goodness and health. I want to say the right things today, whether it's here or whether it's for the rest of the day. That's how I've got to start my day. And I have to read a little. I have to meditate a little. And if I don't do that every day, and as we call a spiritual practice, and I do agree with what Steve was saying about the whole program is about a spiritual way of life. That's not a religious way of life, and that's not, you know, dogma life. It's a spiritual way of life of connecting to something greater than ourselves. This room, for me, is a higher power. People use different words to describe their higher power, have synonyms for higher power. I consider God, in my mind, in using that word, is law. It's law of nature. It's law of the universe. It's law of what choices we can make every day. And I can make a good choice. I can make a so-so choice. I can make a really bad choice. But I do understand I make the choice today. I didn't always buy that. Cut two. I'm born. I'm the youngest of five boys. My mother's 41 years old. Her husband, my father, 44 years old, 9 months before I was born, dropped dead. So she had five boys, and she had 6 months after he died of being very uncomfortable. And they're telling her in those days, whatever the language was, you're in post, you know, stress, and you're in this, and you're in that. And they did all kinds of tests on her. And finally, the doctor said, there's one test we haven't done, and it was me. She didn't know she was expecting because of all the emotional stress and everything. And so therefore, my father died in October, and I was born in June. Already, it's stacked against me. Now, do I know this as I'm coming out of the womb? No. But I come out of the womb, and I am a husky. I'm a big baby. I don't know whether it was the bones or the fat or whatever, but I have been a husky my entire life. That's a word I don't think they use today in the stores or anything. I think it's gone beyond that, you know, to obese or whatever. But I always shopped in the husky department. I always had to look for special clothes, and that identified me as something being different. But anyway, a memory that I had, and this will all tie in with my gratitude, is that at 2 years old, I had to go to nursery school because after, you know, 3 years, my mother had to go back to work. She had five sons. And I can remember the day she took me to nursery school. Now, I might be making this up, but I've been told in therapy and everything, you can't make some of this stuff up. You know, when you have a memory that's like in there like stone, something happened to put that there. But I can remember standing at the top of a stairway, and I was at a United Way type nursery school, and I was bawling my eyes out because my mother was at the bottom of the stairs and she was crying, and I'm asking, why are you leaving me? That was the beginning of my nursery school. Now, that's an image that I've carried around my whole life. And that was the beginning of that thing called abandonment. And cut to a moment in nursery school. I'm supposed to be taking a nap. I'm leaning over my little cot, and I'm learning how to tie my tennis shoe. It's, you know, and I'm learning how to tie a knot. And I learned to tie a knot. I get so excited, but I can't share it with anybody because I'm supposed to be taking a nap. So I hide my excitement. I'm so elated I learned how to tie a knot and everything. And by the time I got home and I wanted to share that, you know, my mom had worked all day long. I learned she was tired. I learned, oh, I better not bother her. And so I'm just sort of giving you the shades of the palette of colors that I learned to live at a very young age, way before you know how to live. And I learned with one parent, and this, everything I'm talking about, I have learned at this point in time, but I didn't know it then. But when you have one parent, when you have one parent, you have a problem as a child because you have to have an ally and an adversary as you're growing up to define your personality and your definition of who you are and to learn, you know, in the terrible twos, the yes and the no, the yes and the no. Well, if all of that ally-adversary comes from one parent, it is the major cause of insanity in children. Because you don't know whether you're talking to your ally or your adversary. And so you learn how to walk on eggshells, and you learn how to be a politician, and you learn how to say the right thing at the right time to get what you want. That's great if you're going to be a politician. But if you're trying to live your life and have an open heart and to learn to love and everything, it's a disaster. And due to circumstances, I did not come from a touchy-feely, you know, huggy, kissy home life. And all of a sudden, I'm in my teens, and I'm visiting my godparents and staying with, like, their four or five kids. And I used to be the person, when they'd come around to hug everybody goodnight, I'd pull the covers over my head and say, don't touch me. Now, these are all things that led to this, why we're here today. Because I denied myself emotions because I didn't know what they were. I didn't know what love was. I knew what survival was, and I learned well. And my mother taught me well, a lot of stuff. But what she didn't do for herself, and this is all in hindsight, she chose to raise five boys, keep us under one roof, move back to her hometown to be with her mother and father, but she never got over being bitter about it. And it had an effect on me, big time. And I covered that up with cynical humor, with caustic dialogue, caustic humor. And over my whole life, I was cold. But inside, I was warm. But I didn't know it. And over the years, people say, that's not you, that's not you. But there was something in me that was withholding. Now, let's get to some gratitude. I have learned today that out of the greatest pain comes the greatest success and happiness and love. Because without some of the pain, and I, as they say when you work out, you know, no pain, no gain. There's some truth in that, but I don't want to buy into it 100%. I think you can live a life painless and still be really great. But we as a society, we as the way we grow up, the way I grew up, you know, a little pain makes me aware of something. Okay. I've had an eating disorder since I was born. And I know that. And I dealt with it in all the wrong ways up until about the middle of the 90s. I came to this program in 96. My Eskimo was somebody I was on a bowling league with. And he was having a traumatic time because the kitchen was having a problem getting his salad out because he was on program. And everybody in the kitchen was all messed up, but his salad wasn't coming, and he was going ballistic. And I'm watching this guy, and I'm going, he's sort of reacting the way I do. And finally the salad gets there, and he's like a rabbit, you know. And afterwards I said, I need to talk to you, and because he made a comment like I'm in a program. And I said, I think I need to talk to you because I have some of those feelings when my food doesn't come. And at that point, my food was not abstinent. It was just whatever it is, you know. And he became my Eskimo to this program. Some of you probably know him. And he's been in and out. He's back in now and doing really well. But it was the beginning of a journey that also, I qualify for every 12-step that's ever been created. Even if I don't know about them, I know I qualify. Because a lot of dysfunction in that upbringing. And today I can see that most of us live our lives by that first 2 to 7 years old. And we formulate what we're going to do based on what we learned then. Now, some of us can naturally grow out of that and create some new thinking. I'm a big person. I study new thought a lot in many different areas. But we can get new thinking. But if we don't have the tools and we have those behaviors / habits in place, we will revert to those at all times when we feel something different. When we don't want to experience whatever the new feeling is, we will go back to that habit, whether it's a good habit or a bad habit. And guess what? Food, for me, most of my life was a bad habit. I lived to socialize in food. I lived to have it entertain me, to give me pleasure, to do everything except be just fuel. Because it's what I created. It's what was my thing. To this day, at 3 o'clock or about 3:15, I can look at the clock and I can remember getting out of school and going home to an empty house as a latchkey kid, and there was always something that my mother had made on Sunday that was on the counter, and I could have a piece of it, and I could pour a glass of something out of the refrigerator, and that was my survival mechanism at about 3:15, 3:30. To this day, I know when it's 3:15. That's an embedded habit. So, cut to program. I get 3.5, 4 years of abstinence. I need to qualify. My weight loss is about 66 pounds right now. I have plateaued in the last year and 3 months a couple times, almost to disastrous thinking, eating abstinently, and everything just stopped. Can anybody relate with that? You know. And I see a nutritionist because I've got some health issues with diabetes too, a couple other things, hypertension, that all go along with the weight. And she said, you don't always have to be losing weight to be successful. Really? I don't have to be always losing weight? That's the goal of my life. That's what I'm going to die doing, losing weight. She said, no. She said, you can be doing perfectly fine. Your body's going to tell you what it's going to do. And so that gets back to that husky. I love the difference between you and I. You know, you're a much thinner person and everything. I will never look like Steve. I may want to look like you, but I never will. So who am I and who do I accept and everything? I have become so grateful for the way I can think today. Life is not perfect. There's always stuff going on. As I said, each one of us in this room has a story. We've got issues. We've got relationships. We've got work. We've got economic issues. They're all there. My greatest gratitude thing is I'm grateful for it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That was not true before program. I can find in the worst situation something to be grateful for. Even in the deepest and darkest tragedies that we read about or we might participate in other people's lives or our own lives, even in the deepest tragedy, if we are connected spiritually to a higher power, we can react to that tragedy with some kind of gratitude that you're able to be of service to somebody, and that might be yourself. But mostly, it's usually to somebody else who's in bigger trouble than we are. And I think our program guides us to live a much more generous life, a kinder life, a more mindful life. And the last person that learns all this for me is me. Okay, that's 15, so I'll go about five more. And then we'll open it up for questions. I still today can have what I am describing right now as violent self-talk, where I don't support myself. And it can be from lack of sleep. It can be from being reprimanded at work for doing something you thought was right, but it wasn't, or you went outside the rules a little bit, which I tend to do, and I think a lot of program people, we tend to like to live outside the boxes of restraint. And we tend to do what we want to do, when we want to do it, and how we want to do it. That's a little bit of our disease. And how we live with that's another story. But today, I can stop my self-talk. And I can go, wait a minute. Where are you going with this? What is it you want to abuse inside yourself today? And going along with what Steve said, what I have really learned for myself is that I'm the app in me that I can use. I can, take a picture of my life out there, which is nothing more than a reflection of what's in me. In reality, everything in my life is up here and through here, through my camera. Okay, and I take the pictures. Now, I have a choice on my phone to keep it, crop it, delete it, and start over. I have that same capability inside me as a human app. But I take it as we're a spiritual app. I have a spiritual app that I didn't have before program. And I spent my life searching spirituality and teaching. And I started when I was a teenager, and I won't go through the array of teachings. And it started in religion. I was born and raised in one of the major religions where I had nothing but original sin the second I came out of the womb. I never bought it as a young person. I never bought it as an adult. I used to get smacked by certain people who wore black and white outfits, and which is good training for 12-step programs, I think. And I never bought that I had a sin. And today, none of us have a sin. We make mistakes. And that's all we do is we make mistakes. And all we have to do is get back on mark, back on mark, back on mark. Some days we choose to get back on. Some days we go, you know what? I'm going to vacation here today and have a pity party and sit on the couch and, you know, not use the food as in the past, but say, okay, I'm going to give myself a day. And then I better start my day, whether it's 8 hours later or 12 hours later or 24 hours later, I better start a new day. Because if not, I'm lying to myself. And by lying to myself, I'm being violent with myself. Hmm. I try in my life right now to eliminate all violent self-talk. I'm not 100% successful, but I'm aware of me. And when I see things out there that push a button in me, I stop. Because whatever I'm seeing, it's that thing, you know, own it. What is it? You spot it, you own it, or what? One of those phrases. Yeah, exactly. If I'm seeing something in somebody or in an action or something that is not making me feel right, I have to stop and take a big pause and say, okay, Frank, why are you seeing this? What is it you're trying to tell yourself? And 9 times out of 10, I'm going back to a past habit that I deleted. But guess what? You know, you delete everything on your phones and your computers, and you know what the NSA is doing now? They can find everything. So why can't I find everything in my own app? It's all still there. None of it goes away. All the pain, all the suffering, everything that we've experienced, it's always there. But we can file it. We can put it in the archive. We can put it in the trash, but even going in the trash, it will come back. So in gratitude, and I say this with such sincerity and simplicity, it's every breath, it's every look, it's every person in this room. Some of us can accept that. I mean, I feel love in this room because I'm giving love, but I also feel it. But if I wasn't giving it, I couldn't feel it. And I think that's where we get in a lot of trouble as human beings on this planet. And not to generalize, and I'll get back and I'll wrap up, you know, because of technology, we see a lot of stuff that looks terrible. You know, on the news, on the radio, speaking of radio, and it looks really bad. But if you do a little research, we have more peace on this planet than we've ever had in its entire history, of recorded history. There's more peace, there's more understanding, there's more compassion. But that doesn't sell, technically. Mm-hmm. What sells is negativity. How did we all get in this room? Negativity. Because we didn't know how to love ourselves. We didn't know how to make choices. And then we choose and we choose and we choose. And I know without program, I probably wouldn't be alive today based on the array of 12 steps that I qualify for. But today, and food will always be an issue with me. It's never going to go away. It's never, all those habits are never going to disappear. But I have choice. And if I don't use that choice wisely, it will be the way I express my life. If I do it wisely, it will be the way I express my life. But only my choice can make that difference. And I'm not one person. As Steve said earlier, we're all one. And by saying we're all one means we're the same energy, we're the same DNA, we're the same everything. We're the same thing that's the moon, the, you know, Mars, the planets. We're the same. Whatever life force there is, we're all the same life force. And it doesn't make any difference what our appearing differences are. We're all the same. I try to live from that point every day of my life. So thank you. We can be open for questions, comments.
Is there, there's a microphone. Okay.
Frank.
I don't know if anybody can, do we need to have somebody, if anyone wants to speak since it's been recorded to.
I think they need to sign.
Yeah, maybe somebody has a piece of paper. Actually, I think I've got a pad here. Okay, great. Thanks.
I'm Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Compulsive eater. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. And I came specifically to try to find gratitude in my work. And you had mentioned work. And I've come a long way because I've used the steps and the program for a year now to at least not be in depression about it. But I don't have that gratitude. I have the, I should be grateful. I should be grateful I have a job I like. I should be grateful I have a boss who gives us money. I should be grateful. And I just am not there, and I wondered, because you brought that up, that you might have some help.
Thanks, Linda. Somewhere in that should is your gratitude. And you just keep going. Keep hanging in there. I don't love everything in my life. But I do try to enjoy it. And when it comes to the work relation, there are days I'm going into work and I'm going, oh, I'd much rather be doing, and then I stop myself and I go, what is it you'd much rather be doing? And I go, well, isolating, introversion, not talking, being with anybody, all real healthy behaviors, right? That's what I'd rather be doing if I really confront myself. So I go, oh, well, then you're probably better off going to work today. And then a little bit I get out of myself, and there's something going on at work that I can be participating in that might be beneficial If it's beneficial to somebody else, it's beneficial to me. If it's not beneficial to somebody else, it's probably not going to be for me either. So it's sort of in that vein. You know, on the worst day at work, find something you can latch on to and go, oh, I'm glad I'm here. Where would I be if I wasn't here? You know, kind of thing.
Beach.
Even that gets old.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Judy Kay, Grateful Compulsive Eater. I always say grateful. And I want to thank both of you. This was wonderful. And I agree with everything you both said. I find some tools for me that really help me is when I'm in something to look at it from the big picture. So I visualize this mountaintop and say, okay, this is uncomfortable, but what does God want me to learn here? And if I can get in that big picture, it really helps. The other thing I really liked about what you said is monitoring my thoughts. So I know that self-awareness, because I can go into the negative thinking. It's like, all right, what is going on there? I don't like that. And being able to stop it and use our tools. So, you know, that's where it's at. Even if I'm making it up, I find I feel better. It's like if I can, you know, I'm afraid and I say, okay, what do I want? I want courage. And even if I start saying an affirmation, you know, I have courage, something about saying it, the body takes it on, even though it may not be my truth at the time. So I love what you said about gratitude. I really want to thank you.
Thank you.
I thank you, Steve and Frank, for your share. My name is Beth, compulsive eater.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Beth.
I'm glad I'm not alone with my negative thinking, especially around my career and work. And I've been in the same job for 3 years, and it's been such a growth process as I've been in program to accept what is. And somebody asked me, so what are you doing about it? And I'm like, well, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and but I'm powerless. But and I think for me, just having that gratitude list and being appreciative of what I'm doing and where God wants me. And I think, you know, I'm always trying to, what is the underlying issue? I'm just this giant onion I keep peeling back about my inner intentions. And overall, I think it's my sense of entitlement. I'm entitled to X, Y, and Z because I've accomplished, you know, X, Y, and Z. And the reality is the world doesn't care. I mean, they care on what I do on a daily basis with my attitude. And I seek to be optimistic. And sometimes it can be very difficult. When I struggle with chronic disease and chronic stuff that's going on. And, you know, some days I just, at work, I go into the bathroom and I hold my head in my hands. But I say, thank you, God. I'm learning to say, thank you, God, for everything. Thank you for my headache. Thank you for my exhaustion. Thank you for years to allow me to hear. Thank you for, you know, just running that gratitude list. Another tool that helps me even connect with my higher power through gratitude is when, you know, I've got these negative thoughts going on, is going through the alphabet and giving attributes to my higher power. You know, God, you're amazing, you're beautiful, you're courageous, you're daring, you're elegant, and just kind of it gets me out of, you know, a specific train of thought. And an example of being positive in a challenging situation, I was in the hospital about a year ago and had to go through surgery. And I'm like, what can, you know, joy come out of this? And I was at a store, and I found this big spool of ribbon that had joy on it, and like, you know, like 40 times. And I cut the joy, and I asked my dad or mom when they were at the hospital to please give this little piece of joy to anybody who entered the hospital room, whether it was a nurse or a doctor or a janitor or whatever. And so, you know, it was just one of those kind of rewarding things that, how can I spread joy in this challenging situation? And then I also had them write down the names of each person, or, you know, the nurses on shift. And I ended up writing a thank you note to each person that I remembered. And so this program teaches me to continue to serve others, love others, and get out of myself. And it can be very difficult when I swing on that pendulum. I can find joy in great situations, but that daily sitting at my desk for 8 hours, filtering Excel spreadsheets, I'm like, all right, you know, how can I find joy? How can I be of service? And it's definitely a continued process. So thank you.
Thank you.
You know, that was great. And a couple of things people have said here this morning. I just want to touch base. And Frank, you were saying that you're feeling a lot of love, but you're also receiving a lot of love. And for me, that's one of the spiritual principles, is that I can only receive what I can give. And so, I mean, it says you can't transmit what you haven't got. So I can't transmit something I haven't got, because my internal negative dialogue is so loud, I'm not getting anything to be able to give. I think that the purpose for me of this concept of gratitude isn't that I should feel gratitude about everything in my life. Sometimes if I'm not happy with things in my life, that's information that's important that I need to pay attention to. It may be that I'm not in a career that's fulfilling. It may be that I'm not in a healthy relationship. And those are things to not necessarily be grateful for in and of themselves, but to be grateful for the information, hey, I'm not happy, and I need to do something about this, and then be able to search what is it that's not being met. Sometimes I'm not grateful because I've got expectations that are completely unrealistic, and even that's helpful to know. You know, what is the standard that I'm listening to here? So, but I love the pieces of joy. That's wonderful. And that's what brought this up, is that you were giving joy, it seems, so you were able to receive it as well. And there's that flow. But as long as that internal dialogue is so loud, and then being able to witness myself is huge, because I need to be able to see, what is my disease telling me? And I shared about this briefly yesterday, as I'll tell some sponsees that have that particularly loud, negative, violent internal dialogue, to write it out in first person. I am, you know, or it's like, you suck. You're never going to be. And it's, for me, it got very, very toxic. But get it out. And I had to do it for a couple of weeks on a daily basis. This is what I wake up with, that my mind produces. It doesn't produce that anymore. But I would literally get it out and be able to then go, oh my God, that's what I'm producing, which helped me start to witness myself. That's the purpose of that, is to be able to go, wow, I'm really doing this. And then after a while, I didn't need to write it down. I was able to do it in real time, and then be able to make that choice in real time that we talked about. I have a choice. Do I want to listen to this? This is me tuning into my ego. Do I want to listen to God? Do I want to get out of myself completely and listen to somebody else? How are they doing? So, good stuff.
You do realize when you sign this, you're signing your life away, all your inheritance and children. And
hi, I'm Elaine, a recovering foodaholic.
Hi, Elaine.
I would like to share a way that helped me with my gratitude attitude. Several years ago, I was not a grateful person at all, and was challenged to keep a journal. Specifically a gratitude journal. And the challenge that I gave myself was to write down every day 5 things at the end of the day that I was grateful for through that day. I also challenged myself to never write the same thing twice. Okay? So I started this journal. And the first couple of weeks, it was pretty easy. I had my home, I had a family, I named each of my children, I went through all these things that I was grateful for. But after a couple of weeks, I started writing down, I am grateful for my right toenail, because it became a real challenge every day to find things that I was grateful for. And so then, through the day as I progressed, I started looking for things to be grateful for in my day, so that I would have something to write about at night, because I was running out of hairs and things to be grateful for. And so then, as I traveled my day, I would suddenly see something, and it would go, yes, I am grateful for this moon in the sky this morning. I'm grateful for that red cloud that just appeared in the sunrise. I'm grateful for those leaves that suddenly dropped from a tree in front of me. It was incredible. And so then when I got home at night, I was able to write those things down as things that I was grateful for. It changed my whole attitude. And even today, when I see things that tell me that my higher power is actively involved in my life, I can realize that I am grateful for that. If I'm driving in the car, I see a duck or a rabbit or all these things. It totally changed my attitude. It gave me a new perspective of things to be grateful for and an attitude of gratitude in my daily life.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm Sage, compulsive eater.
Hi, Sage.
Hi, Sage.
I want to just share some gratitude for my wife's sponsor, who gave her the assignment of having her write down 5 things that she adores about me every day. And that turned into gratitude. You know, the relationship completely transformed, because sometimes, you know, seeing through that eye of what is critical and what's not, what we don't like about another person, can transform it in an opposite way. So I started to do it also. And what I'm noticing is, as I'm grateful about different things that my partner does, it changes the dynamic of the relationship. So perhaps you could speak a little bit about the power of gratitude and its effect on relationships.
Gratitude in relationships. Well, all right. This is raw, but I'm in a position right now where I decided that I don't want to be in a relationship with a single person. So I wanted to be able to experience dating multiple people, and I'm doing it honestly and with communication. So I'm dating this one woman, and we both are in agreement that this is what we want to do, but she's starting to feel a little bit insecure. And wrote me an email this morning, in fact, that I was responding to before I came in here. My gratitude is that I can see her as a person who is just trying to live her life, and I can be grateful for the fact that she's communicating to me honestly her feelings of where she's at, because it gives me an opportunity to be loving and be sensitive to where she's at with her feelings. It's an opportunity where there's no power play, there's no defensiveness, there's no manipulation. It's just honest communication. And in the past, I could easily see that as a threat. Something's being demanded of me that I don't want to give. I can dig my heels in, and I'm so grateful. It completely shifts the way that I can respond to that kind of authentic, honest communication in a way that could allow us to work through this and still really enjoy being together. And it's a little rocky. Neither of us have ever done this before, dating other people at the same time. And I want to explore it, and I don't know whether it's something that's going to work for me or not. And she's in the same boat. So it's beautiful to be able to see, and I'm so grateful that we're able to communicate honestly and trust and take the risk. So I don't know if that answers your question, but there's a lot of gratitude there, because to me, this is allowing me to make inroads into areas that are allowing me to live a full, vibrant, abundant, prosperous life in abstinence by being vulnerable and authentic in communicating. I'm so, so grateful for that.
I'd like to just comment that over my life, what I thought was love, and several times in my life, it was actually emotional hunger. And I would destroy the relationship out of neediness, thinking it was love and not wanting to let this person out of my sight, or, you know, have any life outside of me. And over the years, and, you know, based on the background I shared with you, over the years I realized that wasn't love. That was need. That was, you were starving for emotion. So you were going to devour these people with your own emotional needs. And when I realized that, I understood why sometimes people would run to the hills, because I thought it was love, and it wasn't. It was just complete abuse. I did not know that. Today in my life, years later, probably in better shape today to be in a real relationship, but in all honesty with myself at my age and who I am and my life the way it is, I don't think I have the energy to commit to a one-on-one relationship at this point in my life. And it took me a few years to get to that place of saying that to myself, because I don't want to invest that much in that one-on-one relationship. I like it with a lot. And I'm not saying that that's not intimate with a lot, but I don't have the energy. It, at least, and then somebody said, you know, it's going to walk right up and hit you in the face. And you're going to go, da, 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 you know. But at least at this point, I'm honest enough with myself to know where I want to put my energies. And, you know, some people it's very important to be in a one-on-one. What I found over the years is in one-on-one relationships of any kind, if the relationship breaks up and they've been in it like for 10, 15, 20 years, 2 weeks later, they're back in a relationship. They're used to the routine. And then people who are more individual, you know, there's longer times between the jumping in to the emotions and the activities of a relationship. But I've seen, you know, people, you know, 35 years of marriage and all of a sudden they're getting a divorce, and almost respectable divorce where there's still love there. I always wonder about relationships when you get to the end of 24 years and you hate each other. Was there ever love there? Or was it just a convenient habitual ritual that we lived with? But when you've got a nice separation going where you can still love the person you're divorcing and go, it's just not working. But 2 weeks later, they're dating and they're, you know, they're, because it's part of their routine. It's part of their life. So I think you can be in tremendous relationship with self and be very content. That's all I wanted to say on that. We still got...
Yeah.
Yeah, we got like 5 minutes.
I'm Carolyn, compulsive eater.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I really appreciate being in a room where there's honesty and hearing you talk very honestly and from the heart. There's just a comfortableness about that. And I recognize that because I'm one of those that when we read How It Works, there are some of us who do not have the capacity to be honest. There are such unfortunates, and I'm one of those. I do not have the capacity without God to be honest and forthright. And there's just a hunger for it. And when I feel it, it just feels so at home and so good. But my disease, a large part of my disease is negativity, negative thinking. I love to sink into that morbid reflection. I'm broken, I'm worthless, I'm hopeless. I'm this. It's just so self-oriented, and it feels so good. I just love to be there and wallow in it, and I loved what you said about what else would I rather be doing? Home isolating in morbid reflection. That's what I would love to do. Just reveling in it and swirling in negativity. And then whoever else I can gather in with me, that is my disease, and that's where I like to go, and anything that adds to that. And that's first before I eat or anything else. And so I thank you for just the thoughts. There is a choice. No matter how powerless I am, I have a choice. I can choose to be in gratitude. That's a choice I can make. I can step over out of that darkness into the light and then go from that area and let God help me with it. You know, if I can't, if I'm powerless, he helps me at least. But I have that power of choice. And thanks for the reminder. Good words. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for your shares. They were really, really powerful. I really enjoyed them. I'm Diana, compulsive eater.
Hi, Diana.
And I'd like if, Steve, if you could elaborate. You were talking about your accountability partner and you make a plan in the morning, and you talked about how when you make the plan that afterwards you say, it's okay, you know, God, tell me if this is cool with you. I like, you know, I like the way you put that. But I have a problem with before I make the plan, because we're always in just for today and one step at a time. And if you're making long-term goals, I'm constantly struggling with, are my long-term goals right? And I'm sure there must be some meditation or whatever prayer you do before you make that plan for the day, and I'd like for you to elaborate on that.
That's a we don't have a lot of time. Probably best to talk about that offline, but I can really, really briefly encapsulate. There's a whole concept of what my vision for my life is that I'm in a state of evolution about, and I had a I kind of threw something down on paper, not really knowing if I'd never been the kind of person that's known what they wanted to do. So I just thought, throw something down on paper, some kind of working thing, and then see what information comes from source to be able to inform me. Maybe there's something different. There's a lot to be said there. As far as the morning meditation, or as far as planning my day, I try to think in terms of my life consists of many different components. I've got my financial, my career, personal relationships, my home environment, transportation, like what am I driving kind of thing. Whatever, everyone has this wheel of life. And so when I plan my day or my week, let's say, I like to be able to pick, I'm going to take some actions that are going to walk me towards my goals in this area and this area and this area, and have a well-balanced, like a well-balanced meal. Not just focus on just career. So I'm mindful of all these different areas. But then we can have a whole conversation about where does God come in, and then being able to turn it over. Yeah, there's a lot there, so we should probably talk offline.
One more?
Judy W., compulsive eater.
Hey, Judy.
Hi, Judy.
I'll try to phrase this in a positive way. I relapsed recently, and I was doing everything. I was writing my 5 gratitudes. I was praying and meditating every morning. I was getting on meetings. I was sponsored. I was sponsoring. I had a year and a half of abstinence, and I was in the Denver I was in the Phoenix airport waiting to go to the Denver assembly, and they kept delaying the plane. And I, you know, when I reflect now on it, I think there was some fear there for me. And just occurred to me to get up and go into the concession and get, quote, abstinent food, but it wasn't on my food plan. And I've never eaten anything off my food plan without talking to my sponsor about it. So I think for me, you addressed humility at one point. And I've been a chronic slipper, relapser, and various 12-step programs. This is my home. It treats my physical, it treats my emotional, it treats my spiritual, and I need that. I don't know. Can you help me? You spoke in the beginning about there'll come a point between the food, and the only thing between you and the food is God. And maybe kind of address what you can do in those times where it's just you and God and the food. Thank you.
Sure, sure. We're really short on time, but really briefly, it's a really general statement. There will come a time where there'll be nothing between you and the next drink, but your relationship with God. It's a very general statement, so it's left open for us to define and flesh that out as we will. We're talking about our relationship with our higher power. I like to keep in mind that this is a program that's life and death for me, so it's important. But whether I have continuous abstinence or I'm struggling in my abstinence, this is not going to sound great, but it's kind of like there's something for me to learn if I'm slipping. So it's a matter of kind of relaxing and going, you know what, there's nothing different about me than there is about the person that's got 20 years of abstinence. There's really nothing different. I mean, this is for me. So there's something for me to learn. There's something that's happening in me that I haven't yet uncovered. It may be something that I'm not in touch with yet, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep digging. I'm going to keep taking that pickaxe, and I'm going to keep chipping away and finding out how I can clear that channel. And although it may seem like all that happens is a spark flies and there's no chip that flies, there's no movement, there's no doesn't look like anything's happening, I can do that 99 times, and on the 100th time, that rock will shatter, and boom, huge progress can be made. And it means that the 99 hits that I did before weren't a waste. It slowly weakened it. It slowly prepped it. Something was happening there, even though I couldn't see it. So it's a matter of faith. If I'm looking at it like there's no progress being made, that's a perspective that I can choose not to have. And so it's a matter of faith. And there's nothing that prevents any one of us from having that abstinence, but it's a matter of not giving up and just keep going. So, sure. Okay, yeah, so it's 9:46. So thank you for letting us be of service. It's been great being here. And maybe we'll just quickly end with the Serenity Prayer and then let the next group come in. I'm not sure what's happening next year, but why don't we take maybe a moment, maybe 30 seconds of...
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Keep coming back. It works. If you're worth it, then you're worth it. Thank you very much.
That was great.